And we are back again. How are we doing, boys? Darren, what's going on in the world?
Nothing much, brother. All good.
How you doing, Cliff?
I'm fine, thank you.
So for people who don't know, how do we all meet each other? I would say the Honor Submission Gracie Camp. How good was that, guys?
Awesome.
Oh, it was amazing. I was very happy. If I get a chance, I'd go again.
Oh, such 100%. An incredible experience, wasn't it? Yeah. Like the seminars, the beach, and just meeting all like-minded people, was to say, it was fantastic. Mm. But from the camp itself, what was something you guys both, I don't know, really took from it? What was, a detail from a seminar or rolling on the mats? What was something you both learned? Darren, what about you?
Well, details from seminars, I felt like they were the best set of seminars I've ever done. There were so many details in every seminar, so it's hard to single out one. Rogers were awesome. That's got to be said. For me, I think it was because we kind of networked quite a bit early on. I'm meeting Cliff and the Irish lot and the Austrian lot. It was even outside of the seminars, we were always talking about jiu-jitsu at some point. And there's something about keeping your mind engaged in it the whole time, you know?
Oh, 100%.
That was a good thing.
Yeah.
What about you, Cliff?
Well, I would say like... The way they approached the mechanics and they were able to show the details that made like a huge difference. Things that we already kind of use, but you know, but they made it in a way, in such a fashion that it became more effective, you know. So like the mount control, the side control itself, the actual having the ability to control the position to in this, and after that get the submission, that was for me eye-opening, you know. I was really happy to learn that.
That's fantastic, and the sort of stage by stage detail, especially with Roger's seminars, a prime example of you could show that movement in a fundamentals class, but the amount of incremental steps to get to A to B to C to D to D, it's not just a A, B, C, D. These are the stages. It's so many different, what if they do this, what if they do that, and that kind of thing. It's fantastic. Mm-hmm. But on the subject of how you guys learn, we had to talk about one of the restaurant nights, Rutcliffe, when you're on your phone with the notes. How do you learn? Because it seems like you've got such a process of taking in information.
Well, the way I learn is like it's in steps, basically. Or when I'm, let's take the mount for example. I would look at other fighters or all the fighters who are good at mount, and of course Hajar, he's one of the best in there. And then I would look at his fights, and then I would look at how he would explain it, anything on an instructional or on YouTube. And then you could actually see the similarities, and there's nothing better than to actually roll with a person and seeing him roll, that also helps. So the way I learn is just by looking and writing down the steps, and then it also helps when I explain it to my students and stuff like that. So that helps a lot. So it's just like a constant process that I'm like touching, feeling, and thinking about the mount in this case, you know?
No, it's good to have that kind of very specific sort of process of, okay, I'm looking at this position now. I'm looking at how I'm going to emulate the higher level guys doing what they're doing and competition. Sure. And that kind of thing. It's such an important way to do it. What about you, Darren? When you're taking on a new technique, how do you go about learning it?
For me, very similar. I think a lot of people learn similarly. I need to get my fair share of drilling in. And if I do one lot of drilling, go away and don't revisit it anytime soon, it tends to just go. I don't know whether that's just me or most people. So I like to, I was saying to you, wasn't I, on the plane on the way back, I was kind of half asleep, but half kind of trying to run through all the different seminars we did, just trying to kind of jam it in there somehow. I think coaching helps, because like we were saying, we've been touching on some of the stuff we've been learning, and just teaching that to other people refreshes it in your brain as well. You find the same?
Well, I find like helping with coaching, you can see that if you're missing a detail, you can see them actually not getting the position the way it's supposed to. So you have to be extra like paying attention to detail. That really helps a lot. Also, I like to write down. I like that. That's one thing I like to do as well. I like to write down the things, and it's sort of like I get to see it in my head better, you know.
Yeah.
And then I explain it. It just comes one after the other. That's one of the things I really, really like. But just like you said, the coaching, it really helps.
It definitely helps. Yeah.
I find note-taking such an important process, especially after a session or even beforehand, thinking about what my game plan today is going to be like. Going into a session, I'm working on this, so I'm going to find myself in this position or put myself there, or I'm going to work on this certain thing, and then get feedback. Because it's so tempting to have this, I'm rolling now. This is the first issue I've had. This is my now current focus. And then the next round, something else happens. And your focus is on that. And then you keep going in that sort of train and you seem to just constantly problem solve different problems instead of prioritizing. Mm-hmm. Like, how do you guys develop your own games? Do you find yourselves sort of isolated in a certain position for a fixed period of time? Is it more of a just keep rolling in constant feedback? What sort of things do you find?
Well, I have to be honest, like when I started to do specific sparring, we kind of implemented it around back in like in 2020 with my friends and stuff that we all got together and we trained and we did a lot of specific sparring. It really exposed a lot of our weaknesses. You know, you could see that the things that we tend to do all the time don't get a chance, and we have to start to develop new skills, and it will make black belts look like white belts at a certain point. Yeah, because you always try to, you tend to always drift to what you can do. So whenever you're trying to prioritize something or trying to learn something new, I would highly suggest to keep it in that scope, and specific sparring can really help with that.
Hmm. What about you, Darren? How do you sort of prioritize your training as such, where you're rolling consistently throughout a week? Do you have something in the back of your mind I'm trying to work on? Is it something you just kind of naturally find yourself developing different things? How do you?
So I think there's definitely a few things I kind of spontaneously develop. Like, you might be rolling and you'll just figure something out which will stick. But in general, I like to dwell in certain areas. So I'll always have, like, maybe for like a month or two or whatever, I like to dwell, like, say in the concentrate on full mount. So just, especially this is where it's good rolling with lower belts as well, because you can usually get to mount fairly quickly and then just dwell on that position, like, and work all your stuff off that. I like coaching that way as well. I know Ray likes coaching that way, which helps. I find that I like context around each position and each submission and each escape and stuff like that, rather than jumping from like side control to mount to this escape. You know what I mean? Mm. I like to kind of build up one area before I move on a little bit.
Yeah, sort of build a system, because especially like a lot of mind-dependent training is watching instructionals, and a lot of that is a built-in system of, okay, this is what we're going to do, this is another option, this is another one from the same position, and you start to really develop a system. Mm. And I feel like that's how you really start to build a game and really start to expand on what you already know. Because if you do A and A doesn't work, now what?
Yeah.
You need your B, you need your C, and you need just understanding of how am I going to get to there? Because this was something I was working on this time last year when I wasn't in the best sort of mindset, when I was going through my notes and these processes, it's constant flow. And the idea being that your game plan is only worth having if you can implement it. Like, say, standing, for example. If your entire game is based around takedowns and the guy's a better wrestler than you, you're a better judoka, now what?
Yeah.
You can go pull it pretty quick, and then what do you do? Yeah. And it depends, a very interesting thing. That's what I find with competition. That's the main thing. I mean, both of you competing consistently and doing very well at that. How do you find the competition practice opposed to normal training, the build up to it? What's your general competition sort of process to get ready for one?
Well, basically, generally, you have like a certain outline. A competition has its part that's standing. It has its part that either you're a top player or you're a bottom player, and you need to know how to navigate through all that. I find, like, just like you said, like, if you can have takedowns, but you should also have your way to have pull. So, like, basically, you should know how to play or be as well-rounded as possible. Nowadays, you can't just be a top player and you just can't be a bottom player. I think you should have a well-balanced game that kind of caters to both. You know, that's very important. And you should think of jujitsu in stages, and you should know in which stage you are. Whether you're on, like they say, like an offensive cycle or a defensive cycle, but also you have to know that when you're in a neutral, you start. So how you're going to approach that all can help. And I heard a lot of people when they're like, "Oh, I'm so nervous and going," but it helps to have a game plan. It's like you're not worried about the people around you. You're more thinking about executing your game plan or plans, for that matter. That's what I think. That's kind of that could be very helpful.
But what about your competition build-up? So what's competition preparation like for you?
Okay, well, preparation for me would be like a balance between actually doing like a strength training, and also like I personally like to drill in the mornings, and then I would like to then do like my my mid training would be my hardest training, where I would be sparring basically. And then at night, if there if I still have more energy, I'd still be doing a bit of drilling. And I like to sweat a lot, and that that kind of like eases my body to just go into that autopilot. That's basically how I would like to schedule my trainings. A good healthy part of strength training, and also drilling, and also specific sparring.
So with your strength and conditioning training, how are you sort of splitting that output? So for example, is it on a scale of 1 to 10 intensity wise, are these sessions in camp like a 7-8? Are they quite intense? Or is it more of a 3-4, more movement work? What sort of thing
is it? Basically, it's very basic. There's nothing too crazy. I don't do anything with CrossFit or anything. It's like more just the meat and bones, squats, bench press, deadlifts, pushing, pulling, nothing too crazy, pull-ups. I think jiu-jitsu itself already asks so much of my body that I can't go do anything crazy. Like, I don't do any like crazy Olympic lifting and snatching or anything. I tend to just keep it pretty meat and bones, you know.
What about you, Darren, with your competition preparation? Because you've done so many competitions now. What's your process? Say you've got a competition 8 weeks out now. What would be your ideal game plan like for preparation?
So I wish I could give some magnificent answer to this. But for me, my concentration goes more into diet. And I'm not, I don't go crazy diet-wise. I do a little bit of fasting and just try and clean up a little bit. My diet's not bad in general. I have to clean it up a little bit. And for me, it's more, I know this sounds crazy, but I try not to think about it too much, because when I first started competing at white belt, you know this, I used to struggle with nerves just because the people watching. That used to be a big thing for me, man. I used to feel sick and stuff like that. And I had a tendency to overthink it and whatnot. So nowadays, I sign up, clean up my diet, and I train quite a lot anyway, man. I train like 6 days a week and constantly doing rounds. So I just stick to that really and, yeah, try and stay as healthy as possible.
It's a fight with the scale as opposed to fight with the opponents.
Yeah, well, I'm not cutting crazy weight, but I don't have to. I just clean up my diet a little bit and it comes off. And then it's just, I try and zone out and just knuckle down my training and not overthink it. Mm. And it's the same on the day. This isn't what I'd recommend to my students or anything like that either, but I'm one of these guys that I tend to turn up there just before my, if I'm not coaching as well, but it's on the same day, I tend to turn up just before my division starts. So I haven't got time to think about it. I kind of rush to the scales, weighing until I'm down some water. And I usually do a pretty pathetic warm up as well. But, and that's really bad advice. This isn't my advice. It's just what I do. But it keeps my mind kind of, you know, in a stable state, and it's worked for me so far, I think.
Oh, 100%. And you hear it with a lot of high-level grapplers as well, who don't tend to emphasize the warm-up too much. They kind of just try and stay as relaxed as possible. And I guess if you're not in that panic state, that stress state, you're saving energy. It's the is it Seneca, whoever it is, if you worry about something, you worry about it twice, it's a problem.
Yeah.
That same kind of idea. I think it's both definitely worded better than that. Yeah. But that same kind of idea of, you know,
yeah,
anxiety is an extra stage of grief, and all the rest of it is an extra problem.
I feel like I've got it down now. I still get a little bit of nerves, but arguably that's a good thing, right? Mm. As long as I don't get that adrenaline rush and dump, then I'm happy.
What's the worst adrenaline dump you guys have had in competition?
I guess the worst one was back in 2018 when I was going to fight Dora World Pros, and it was my first time fighting the world pro at black belt. And then all of a sudden people would come up to me and tell me, this guy is in your bracket. This guy's in your bracket. These are all like world champs, like Humble Bahal's in your bracket. Clark Grace is in your bracket.
I remember you telling me
that.
Oh
man, I was nervous going to the training. I was just leading up to the competition already. I was just nervous. And every time there was this other guy, Patrick Gauji is going to be at the academy training. You mind if he's there? I'm like, I guess, you know, I don't know. You know, it's a free world, you know, like, but it was constantly just like list upon list, all these black belts, top black belts, and people that some of them I actually used to look in magazines before, you know, as a white belt. And I hear he's in the bracket, you know, so that was probably the worst one ever for me, you know. Then I was nervous leading up to it. I was relieved that it was over. You know, I think I lost in the quarterfinals, but I was like, I was like, man, it's over, you know. But I was nervous going to the training. I was as I've never been nervous in a training, and there I was like just shaking, you know, just thinking about it. That really got to me. Like as a white belt, I've been nervous, but I've had black belt at my first world pro. I was really nervous, really nervous.
How did you process that though, when you're feeling that in the training and everything else?
Oh, I tell you, just go through the motion. I just went through the motion, you know, like try to sweat it out and just try to act cool. But still, I was like just shaking. And then I could tell like after when it was over, it's like, oh, it wasn't that bad. You know, like I was like, oh, I could have done better. You know, like that. So like it made me grow, basically. I felt after. But leading up to it, it was horrible.
Yeah.
Horrible.
What about you, Dan? What's your worst adrenaline dump in competition?
Are we talking just jiu-jitsu or?
No, MMA as well, or boxing.
Mine was my first ever boxing belt. I cut loads of weight badly as well. I didn't really know what I was doing. Like I was saying, pumped it all up in my mind. It was only a stupid little belt, really. But cut loads of weight. As soon as I weighed in, stuffed my face. I went to a takeaway joint across the road. Stuffed my face. Super nervous as well. And I remember walking down to the ring, and I could feel all the food and water and stuff in my belly sloshing from side to side. It was just terrible prep, terrible experience. Well, I've learned by it, the same thing, but I've learned by it.
How did that fight go?
I lost by decision, yeah. But to the home fighter, I was rubbish though. I was rubbish that day. The nerves got the better of me, yeah.
Rematch soon come.
I'm too old now.
Nice. I think my worst one was my first MMA fight. That was horrible. Because the first round, you think you're the man. You're firing through, crazy cardio, fantastic. But that second round, you stop down on the stool for a little bit and you just get back up and, oh my God. Afterwards, I was throwing up so much. It's just like, oh. And the adrenaline as well, because the leg kicks and everything else. You walk in, you're like, now it's quite heavy. Yeah. Now everything's quite hard. It's like, okay, I signed up for this for some reason.
Yeah, it's crazy. I was fit as a fiddle back then as well.
Oh, yeah.
But it didn't fit when I was inside there. Yeah.
That's a big thing with conditioning, though. That's why the competition training is always so intense, because it's meant to be the worst version of yourself. If they show up, you should still be sufficient enough to perform.
Yeah.
Because the thing is, you're not preparing to be your best. You're preparing to be at your worst and still be able to perform.
Yeah.
What advice would you guys give to someone for their first competition?
I think I tell them not to take it serious. I tell them to say it's just anything else, any practice, you know. And I would also tell them, don't base your whole, that is like your existence, if you will, only on one competition. You know, like just get a feel for it. You know. It's just like training. You're training in a competition, so you're training to compete, basically. You shouldn't. Because a lot of times, I have some students. They say like, "I don't want to lose. I want to make you proud." I'm like, stop. Don't go down that road. You know, like the cliche thing. Being here already, you've done way more than a lot of other people will ever dare to do. You know.
Yeah.
So I would like to. I always like to remove any added pressure. Like internal pressure that they put it, you know, it doesn't. I try to tell them it doesn't exist. I tend to comfort them, you know, as much as possible. You know, I think that's one of the best advices. It's just, you know, like just like you're training, to compete as well. You know, compete as much and as often as you like, and there's no pressure to, regardless of the result. You know, I think that's the most important thing, in my opinion.
Yeah.
What about you?
I agree with everything he said. Really, I always say, don't even concern yourselves with the results for the first two, three competitions. Obviously, if they get on the podium, happy days, but it's more learning and getting used to the surroundings and the structure of a tournament and stuff like that, isn't it? So yeah, I always say, don't worry about the result, just use it for learning and growing. Worry about fighting for medals and stuff in a few tournaments time. If they're competitive, they're gonna anyway, you know? I'll just try and take that pressure off them.
Definitely.
Yeah, I definitely feel that when it comes to competition, it becomes a separate challenge in itself, for the obvious reason of being an actual challenge. But on top of that, it's a mental challenge, because when you sign up for it, it's like, okay, now it's the same thing. You heard of the plank test, where you walk in on the plank on the floor, and you're fine, but you put the same plank X amount of miles in the air, trying to walk on that, then it's like, it's terrifying, it's awful, but it's just horrendous. John Danaher talks about it.
Right.
Same kind of idea. It's like, why is this thing feel so alien? I remember Raphael for our first competition, he gave us this like sheet, and it was like, write out your game plan so you know what to do and all the rest of it.
I remember that.
I remember, oh, I can do this, I can do that, so I can do any of it, but I can name it.
I've given out that same sheet.
Have you?
To a few people, yeah. It's nice to have. So this sheet he's talking about is basically like, I think you start in the middle somewhere, obviously standing up, and then you've got like takedown or pull guard.
Right.
And then you've got like, it's basically like a, what do you call them nowadays?
Like a spider chart.
You're not allowed to call them brainstorms, are you?
Or a flow chart?
I think so.
Yeah, so it's basically like a flow chart. So you kind of, it allows you to work out where your weak areas are of your game and where you perhaps need a couple more options and that.
Mm-hmm.
But it's good. Like at white belt level, it's really good to...
Definitely. Yeah, that's the kind of thing I would like them to focus on rather than, okay, well, what does my opponent look like?
Yeah. How many have?
Oh my God, I had this white belt student of mine. She was like looking like stalking her competition the whole time. Like she's a 2-stripe white belt. I'm like, yeah, it's okay. You know, it's just 2 stripes. It doesn't, you know, it doesn't matter. You know, they would look up every little detail. That's crazy.
That's one thing I force myself to not do. I don't look at anybody in my division because that just sets off my nerves.
Mm.
I'd rather not know, turn up,
right,
do the best I can, and
that's
what it is.
If I see the list, I have to go to the bathroom immediately.
Yeah, yeah, exactly. The old butterflies start coming.
Oh, 100%, 100%.
Makes it real, doesn't it?
Yeah. I prefer to just go in, doesn't matter what, you know, well, he's there. Good, no problem.
But when you're in the bullpen, you can't help but be like,
oh, yeah, oh, I put on my
probably hoodie. Probably fighting him.
I put on my hoodie on purpose.
I do.
Because I don't blink at a certain point. And, you know, like, it's like those, like, I just want to have sort of a tunnel vision. Otherwise, I'll be looking like this, like that. Like,
yeah, yeah.
And how does he fight? You know, I think he looks like a guard player. Oh, yeah, and I start already, I'm starting to think strategy. And then, like, let's say he fights and then he loses and I had a whole strategy for him. And I look at this other person, I had a whole strategy. You know, like, in the tournament, you can't predict anything, you know. So, like, in the sense of who fights with who, you know. So I tend to just relax, and then when I have to go, I'll go. And then from time to time, I'll look at how they start, what they do in the middle, and what they do in the end, if they're a finisher or not. You know, those three things, nothing. I won't look too long at a fight, but I will scan at least that.
Mm.
But nothing more than that.
Yeah.
I definitely think that's an interesting process because, again, being there, like, remember the All-Stars I did when I ended up going up 3 weight divisions or 2 or 3, whatever it was.
How long ago was that?
This was a little while back. This was, I think, might be the last one you did. I'm not sure.
Okay.
And in the bullpen, because bear in mind, I didn't have anyone at my weight division or the weight division above. So it stuck me at under 88, I think, under 94.
I do remember, yeah.
And in the bullpen, I just see this massive unit doing these big, like, judo warm-up sort of thing. I was like, what is this? The match.
Fair play to you, though, for still doing it.
But this is it. I mean, what has that said? No scales in the streets. I mean, we're learning, the whole thing is like, it's a combat sport and it's practice. It's may not be my day every day, but you know, you still show up, you still got to compete, put yourself out there. And it's all part of the same process because ultimately jiu-jitsu is for the little guy. Even the fact this or the 100 kilo, you know, juice heads are number one.
It's all about leverage, right?
Who said that?
Yeah. That's a thing.
But this is the thing though. It's like, you just got to try.
Right.
You never know.
Mm-hmm.
Like, yeah. When's like an example when you guys have faced a fear when it came to competition? Like, it must be like almost every competition, surely, where you feel that those butterflies and overcome them.
Right. Yeah. No. It's every time, and you go there, and by the time the referee says fight, I like then usually I don't feel anything anymore, and I just go. But I've had times where I wasn't sure that I was going to win. You know, especially if like he comes with a big group and everybody's cheering on that side, it's like, okay, I guess we'll see what's gonna happen, you know. And halfway through, you or sometimes you see somebody like submitting everybody, and you're like, okay, let's see what's gonna happen, let's go. So I've had my fair share where I said like, I'm not sure if I'm gonna win, but I'm gonna go anyways, regardless. I've done that most of the time, actually, at most of my competitions.
Yeah,
yeah, 100%. What about you?
What was the question again?
It's basically whenever you've like faced your fear, like a real overwhelming amount, not just a bit of excitement.
Oh, okay. But that first boxing bout, definitely, because I was terrified. And then the only other couple of times that spring to mind is there was when I did Naga. I remember I was one of the later ones on, and I remember standing when I watched by the mat, sorry, looking at all the fights, thinking, man, what have I got myself into? Bit of panned out, all right. And the other one was where, remember when I fought Braulio student?
Yeah.
So Braulio was in the corner for him as well. A purple belt. And that was just a bit overwhelming because he was coaching. I didn't even have a coach then, did I, either? It was, I had Tim, James Green. Was you there?
No, I wasn't there for that one.
I had Tim, James Green. I can't remember who else. But basically, they were kind of in my corner. And anything Braulio said, like, get the left underhook. Tim and that would be like, Davin, watch the left underhook.
It's anti jiu-jitsu.
Yeah. That's all I can think of, really. Mm. Yeah.
Well, that's it, though. I mean, it's a very common thing. It shouldn't be that common, but in the sport we're in, it's a good thing to have that attribute of courage. Because overcoming that fear, overcoming that anxiety, overcoming all these things, like, it's still there. Because this is something I've asked loads of my guests before. It's how do you deal with it? How do you deal with it? It's not how do you get rid of it.
Yeah. For me, I feel like I haven't got any magical techniques that I use. It's more just desensitization. So at white belt, I was always nervous, like uncontrollably nervous sort of thing. I used to get like a bodgy stomach and all that sort of stuff. And the only way I could deal with it was just keep competing as much as I can. So it just becomes a bit more normal.
Yeah, it becomes normal.
Yeah.
You get used to the adrenaline.
Yeah, exactly.
Basically,
exactly.
You just get used to it. I remember like fighting in the open class for the first times as well. That just like, you know, it's because actually what helped a lot was I was hanging out with some of my friends, like the Meow brothers, you know, and they were like skinnier than me, and they would go fight in the absolute. I really remember like there was this one time I was like blue belt. They went in and I'm like, where are you guys going? We're gonna go fight in the absolute. You're not coming? I'm like, no, because I'm 76 kilos. They're like, oh, come on, man, let's go. And I was like, they're scrawnier than me, man. No, okay, I'm going. I'll sign me up. So I think what helped with me a lot is that my group actually was like pretty fearless, you know. And if you see everybody around you fearless, you kind of think like, nah, man, I'm just gonna follow them. Let's go, you know. So I think that also helps, I guess, with who you hang with, you know. They were like absolute certainty. They were like, man, we're going to beat up these giants, you know.
Yeah. It's quite nice being the underdog in the absolute style as well. If you're not the biggest guy,
definitely,
it takes a bit of pressure off, I find. So if you lose, it's like, okay, he was a lot bigger than me. Yeah. And if you do win, it's like, oh, man.
Yeah, but they told me all the time, like, if he's big, he's like, foot on the bicep. Put your foot on the bicep. Make sure. I'm like, okay, I got it. It's like, we already had like this game plan, you know. It's like, foot on the bicep saves our lives. Keeping those big guys away from us.
Yeah.
You know? But another one thing that I noticed every time when I would go up a division, that was also when I noticed, like, sometimes I'd be like, oh, what am I doing? I remember the first time I fought 85 kilos and I was, like, coming from 76. I was like, man, they're bigger than I thought. They're bigger than I thought. And now I'm, like, in 94. I'm like, okay, they're really strong, you know? But they're not as quick, but they're strong.
Yeah.
You know? So those are, like, those little challenges you face in competition.
Well, here's a common sort of competition question. Say you're in between two weight divisions, do you cut or do you go up?
That's a good question. Do you want me to go or you go?
Go.
So for me, I've always cut, but it's a toss-up, isn't it? Because like you were saying, lighter guys tend to be a bit quick, like all their inversions and stuff like that. Heavier guys, not so much into that, but a bit stronger. I felt like me cutting, so I used to cut to lightweight. I say used to, because I don't think I can do it anymore.
Nice.
And I felt really strong at that weight. So I felt like that was enough of an advantage to kind of overcome the speed. But maybe it depends on the person. I don't know. I think it would probably depend on the individual. And it depends how much you've got to cut. If you've got to drain yourself to get there, it's probably not worth it, is it?
Right. No.
What do you think?
I'm a firm believer of that. Someone, should they cut or not cut, it really depends on how close is the fight, you know? Yeah. I've had good experiences with cutting, But I let's say like I had one, I started a diet in May and I had to fight in October. You know, I was around 83 kilos in May and I had to fight under 77. So I made sure that I had my diet on point. And so I gradually would lose the weight so that I would feel comfortable at that weight. Because sometimes you can reach the weight, but you're totally gassed. I don't know if you guys ever had that feeling. Mm. That once you get to a certain weight, you reach like one day before, but you're like totally drained. You can't even finish the round, and you probably have to go. If you were lucky enough, you go to the second round, and you're just gassed out, winded, and all that stuff. So, I've had to, whenever I think of cutting, I'll do it in advance, well in advance. I don't like to cut like 3 kilos the day before. It's, for me mentally, it's crazy.
Yeah, you're right though. It depends when you're fighting as well. And, right. And some tournaments let you weigh in at 9 o'clock, regardless of when you're fighting.
Right.
Mm. Some, it's like half an hour before your division starts. So right. That's a big difference, isn't it?
Yeah.
Yeah. So for me, I always try and get as lean as possible because fat doesn't help you too much, does it? And yeah, I don't mind cutting a little bit of water, but I don't like going crazy.
Mm. Me neither. If I'm close to the fight, and I'd rather go like the weight class above, because I'll be less stressed even against it. Like I won't be thinking about the weights, you know, like can I make the weight or not? You know, that also is stressful. Like I want to be as like calm as possible going to the fight. I already have an opponent. I don't need to.
yeah.
You know, so.
So for lightweight, I think on average I'd have to cut like 1.5 kilos. Of water, maybe 2 kilos, so 1.5 to 2 liters, and that felt manageable for me. Mm-hmm. But that's not going to happen nowadays. I'd have to cut. I'm middleweight now. I'd have to cut too much.
No, it's definitely an interesting one, and I think it becomes a separate focus and everything else. But if anything, it could be a nice distraction from the actual competition itself.
Mm.
But I think it depends on the individual, their size, their frame, and what it's going to look like. Someone taller and slender, it might be more depleting, whereas someone a bit thicker might be able to lose that water and lean out quite nicer. It depends on how they sort of shape themselves. But
yeah,
that's definitely down to the individual, I feel. I think that's a big part of it. But here's a question for you guys. Who inspires you in jiu-jitsu? Who's inspired you at a point in your journey where you thought, you've seen what they've done, and you're like, okay, that's given me an extra sort of gear.
Like a list. I have a list of guys that inspired me. Like my team basically inspired me. Like I used to be from the Cesar Costa team, and then I would see them compete, and they would, you know, I would literally train with them and see them overcome every day, to like the cargo of training itself, and then go compete and win and stuff like that. That was really a big motivation. You know, I think seeing the Miao brothers and seeing Leandro Lowe actually starting to win and stuff like that, I was like, oh man, it's like our team can do it. You know, we can do this, you know. So definitely, from that point, they really inspired me.
Yeah. For me, it's people like Ying, people like Lewis, so a couple of our students, but basically people like women in general. Because I think like there's a lot of big guys, some juicy, some not, but you can kind of look at them and think, okay, you're going to be half decent at least. But there's also a lot of like guys that are quite unassuming to look at, right?
Mm-hmm.
They're either really thin, or they might look a bit like a geek, computer geek. In Lewis's case, he's a computer geek.
Sorry, Lewis.
No, he won't mind that. He's a proud computer geek. And then when they start training, you kind of wrongly think, you're probably not going to last. And then they stick with it. And like Lewis, turn into a monster.
Mm.
And I think that's amazing. And even more so with girls, because it's not an easy sport for girls. I wouldn't say it's an easy sport for girls to do, because it's quite male-oriented, male-dominated.
Mm.
There's a lot of physical contact, obviously.
Mm.
They're usually the smaller people in the class, if not the smallest.
Mm-hmm.
So to see people like Ying and Aaron, we've got a few of them, haven't we? They just persist and stick to it and keep it. And you see them making progress. Then you see them smashing up a few competitions and that. I think that's awesome.
Mm.
I think that's awesome.
These are your students, right?
Yeah.
That's kind of cool.
But to any females or smaller guys or skinny guys or shy guys, you know, I think it's awesome.
Oh, 100%. For me, it's definitely the juniors, I think. Seeing them, because obviously at that age, seeing them compete, like it must be like extra terrifying or that bit scarier, because they're only small, they've got all these emotions going on, they're still processing, still developing, and there's like shit, what have I signed up for? I don't say that. Yeah. they kind of just have to process it on that bigger scale, and they've got everyone trying to proud, trying to make coaches proud and all the other stuff, and then seeing them go out there for X amount of minutes to do whatever they've got to do and then come back, win, lose or draw.
Yeah.
Especially if there's no tears as well. It's like, yeah, you're a bit like,
usually their parents are watching as well, isn't they?
Yeah.
I remember I used to compete in judo a little bit when I was a kid, with my mum and dad watching. And I remember, I forget what tournament it was, but the pressure of your parents watching is real. And it's not that they did anything to put pressure on me, it's just you're aware they're there. And I remember one fight against the guy, I slapped hands with him. Well, I can't remember even what he did in judo. I think you shook hands, didn't you? And walked up to each other, didn't even get grips. He went straight in front of Ogoshi, threw me over his hip, landed on me. I burst into tears. Didn't stop crying until I was off the mat, and my dad had to walk me to the toilet and console me.
Yeah. And that's it though, it's part of competition experience.
Yeah.
And tears are real, like when it comes to competition, there's a lot going on, and that adrenaline dump, even like older guys as well, adults, like I had it before when I got knocked out. I was just like so upset afterwards, just the devastation of everything I've sacrificed is just not panned out, and it's humiliating at the time and everything else, but you just learn to just process it. But at the moment, so overwhelming, and that's the thing, you just need to learn how to process that kind of thing. But that's reality. When you sign up for these things, you're putting it all out there, and that's what is it, the man in the arena, that kind of thing. It's that kind of idea. I think it's such an important process,
and it's a massive part of like jiu-jitsu as well, right? Like the losing, dealing with the nerves, dealing with like the claustrophobia and pressure. It's definitely character building, isn't it, to say the
least? Definitely. It's not for the weak-hearted.
No, and I think you do come out of it a better person, right?
Definitely.
Without a doubt.
At least a harder person. Like,
yeah.
You've seen things. You've gone through your battle scores.
A humbling of it as well. Like everyone always talks about that. There's always someone better than you.
Yeah, definitely.
Keeps you in your place.
Yeah. The focus, I think I feel very calm whenever I'm able to do jiu-jitsu. When I'm injured, I'm not calm. I'm not relaxed.
Yeah.
When I'm doing a lot of jiu-jitsu, I'm pretty much then, you know, like I have that outlet, and once I have that outlet, I'm like zen. You know what I mean?
Yeah, I'll hear you.
So that makes me a better person in a way. It just, yeah, you feel in sync with yourself.
Yeah, you know, definitely.
Now that sort of synchronicity of jiu-jitsu, the mind, the body, and everything else, and understanding how that connects, I think that's so important, because again, when it comes to being so physically, what's the word? Engaged when it comes to training and mentally engaged and everything else, the emotions, there's so much going on to try and all synchronize and try to all be firing at the same time and the same amount. It's such a hard thing to do. Like, how do you guys stop yourself getting mentally burnt out when you're coaching as well as training as well and trying to learn and trying to do everything?
Sleep. I just sleep it off. 100%. Also, I think not to get burned out, I don't know. I enjoy jiu-jitsu. I think I've done it to a point where I went insane. I said, I'm not doing jiu-jitsu anymore, you know. And but it never lasts, you know. The feeling of being on the mat, sweat on the mat, and training, you know, like being with your friends and after the training, all that it's therapeutic in a way, you know.
Yeah.
I think having your battles, your wars, and then after that, sitting and talking, and then maybe, I don't know, you chill after, you know, that I think that the camaraderie is like something that I think really helps with not getting burned out and stuff like that, you know.
I agree. I don't really feel myself getting burnt out mentally with it. Running the business is a different thing, obviously, but actually doing the classes, my own training and stuff like that, I love it. I love it, and it all helps me improve as a person as well, like in a jiu-jitsu sense. So I don't really feel myself getting burnt out. And I have had a few injuries like over this past 2 years. So when you're out of training, like you were saying a minute ago, that reminds you how good it is to be able to train, you know? So I think, it teaches me to appreciate it a little bit more.
Oh, definitely. And I think that being grateful for your health and grateful in general is such an important attribute to have, and understanding of it. I don't have to go to training today.
Yeah.
I get to go to training today.
Yeah.
And that kind of mindset shift of, okay, I said, if today was my last day of training, I'm going to do all the drills, all the reps, all the rounds, every as much as I can. I'm just going to lap it all up and really enjoy this. And then why don't you start doing that in every session? Why don't you make sure every session has got that same level of appreciation? Obviously, it's hard to maintain, but that mindset of gratitude to be able to go, like, remember Karsh Mahendra's back to lockdown and things like that, where the gyms were shut, everything was all gone.
No one was training.
No one. At
all. No one ever was trained. No one trained at all. We had to wait until the government approved us to train.
Exactly.
In mosques. A lot of baby citizens.
In our bubbles.
Yeah.
But that same kind of idea, it's taken away from you. And then it's trying to think, okay, oh, wait, I really missed this. I really needed this. I want this. That kind of idea. But moving on to running a business and owning a gym and things like that, what advice would you guys give to someone starting their own gym?
Don't do it. No, I'm joking.
I have to think about that. I don't know.
So I would definitely start off with saying, like, don't underestimate how difficult it is. Like, I think from the outside, it'd be pretty easy to just see all the sunshine and rainbow parts of it. But there's so much that goes on behind the scenes that isn't as interesting and can be a bit stressful and taxing and time consuming. So I would say don't underestimate that. Like, make sure you know what you're getting yourself into. There's definitely loads of positives and I don't regret any of it, but it's not all sunshine and rainbows, right?
I believe that. I believe it's like a, you should know that you're taking on a responsibility, you're taking on a role.
There's a lot of people that depend on you as well, isn't there?
They'll be depending. And whatever you say, they'll remember it, you know? Yeah. be more aware of how you portray yourself, you know? And how you be aware that how can you, like, motivate somebody to train, or how can you help them to get to a certain point from A to B? I think that's well, for me, then it's kind of, I think that's kind of personal for the opinion that I'm going to give, you know, it's kind of personal. I find that for me, I'm telling myself to, like, hey, aside from training and stuff like that, also by competing and showing them, hey, competing, being a leader is more what I'm trying to say. It's like, I think that's don't forget, you're going to be a leader. You're going to lead people. So think about having activities after, like, creating a tribe, basically. Spend time thinking of how you can create a tribe more than just seeing it as a business per se. That's what I think.
Yeah. I think there's definitely two distinctive halves to it, isn't it? There's the strict business sides where you're talking about accounts and maintaining your website and all that fun stuff.
Right.
And then you've got your coaching, camaraderie, student side of things.
Right. I think I've got a team that does the marketing and also all that stuff, you know. So that kind of helps.
Yeah.
The accounting, you know.
Yeah. Yeah. So one side I absolutely love and I wouldn't change it for the world. The other side, it's not so much fun. Yeah. But I've had plenty of other jobs in the past, so I can put it into context and I'm happy.
Right.
Overall.
Definitely. I can't see myself doing anything else. No. Like, I'm not a 9-to-5.
No.
No way.
Now, here's a question. This could be a bit of a, I don't know, it's an interesting one anyway. When it comes to the nature of jiu-jitsu, is you learn, and at some point, some people decide, I want to coach now. And then they go off and do their own thing. And this is a natural progression of how the sport expands. How would you feel about your student having their own thing? Making that split as such, is it something that you think, oh, all my stuff is now going to be regurgitated? Is it something that's, I'm happy for what you've learned so far, here's your chance to expand? What is your opinions initially on that?
Well, eventually I want all my students to be able to be on their own and be able to grow and have their own thing. I think that's the main goal. I want them to be better than what I was as a coach. You know, I just make sure that, I hope they're organized. Make sure they have to be organized. That's what I think. I'm not against them doing their thing, but as long as they have the basics and the foundations, I will have full confidence in them doing their own thing. If they don't have an X amount of foundation, then I'll tell them to wait. It's not like, I believe it's more of a timing thing. You know, you should be at the right time. You should do it, not beforehand. You shouldn't be missing a lot of things and then trying to do your own thing. I don't think that's a good idea. Look at your own development first and then help others.
No, definitely. What do you think, Darren?
I was it you, you I was talking to the other day about this? I feel like I'm seeing it. I'm obviously 40 now, and I'm seeing quite a few students coming up in our gym that I can definitely see in the future that they're going to be a massive handful, and I might struggle with them because they've got youth on their side as well. Some of them have got size on their side, but I think for a decent coach, that's a really good problem to have and something to kind of celebrate, right?
Mm.
And that's what I was saying. We were speaking about coaching methods and stuff like that. That's why I feel like it's easy for a coach to kind of almost like showcase their knowledge and skills and teach all their most fancy techniques, no matter what they are, with no real structure to it.
Mm.
Whereas if your goal's to get your students to fulfill their potential and become as good as they can, then you might not be teaching like the pure fancy subs and that every week, but there's more of a structure to it. And I believe the proof's in the pudding, man. It's definitely working with us, isn't it?
Mm.
I'm steering away from the question. It'd be great for students to open up their own gym, and it'd be great to have coached someone through all that and then see them have that knowledge to be able to do that successfully. It'd suck if they opened it up next door to you, though.
Oh, yeah, that's what I think.
Yeah.
That's the thing, though.
Yeah. I've experienced that recently. Is that where you were going with this?
Well, it was kind of more just, in general, the natural progression of things and how people can start to build their own skills. And naturally, say Roger Gracie, for example, Roger Gracie Academies over the country, over the world. Mm-hmm. And naturally, it's essentially, you teach me an armbar, and then I teach it at my academy. And then, is this Dan Lester Jiu-Jitsu? Mm. Or is this Darren Allen Jiu-Jitsu? That kind of question.
It's, I don't know, it's Jiu-Jitsu, right? As long as you're teaching that armbar correctly. And there's various ways to do it as well.
Mm. That's kind of my sort of thought process on that, where it's like, it's the same sport. It's just all part of the same expansion. That's how things can grow and expand. It can't be how it used to be of, you know, it's a secret. It's kind of
with the internet now. There's no
secrets. I don't believe in secrets.
Yeah,
I believe in right mechanics.
Yeah,
I think it's important. I think all these things are really important. When it comes to coaching, owning a gym, all these different attributes, I think it's so important to have your own methodology on things. Like you're saying there about being a leader, I think that's so important. And learning how to lead people, like say yourself as well, Darren, like to be able to be that front of the gym and still compete and still be active and still be engaged and still do all these things, as well as maintaining the ship of everything going on, is definitely commendable. It's definitely such an important thing to do. So no, fair play to you guys. It's incredible.
Cheers, man. I'll try.
Right, we try, definitely. You know, it's a heck of a thing, but you know, I wouldn't do anything else. Like I said, I wouldn't want to do anything else.
Yeah, I agree.
Now is my time to stir the pot. What do you guys think about cross training? Because there's loyalty, there's gyms and all sorts.
Right.
But being a crayonch and going to a different gym and training there as well.
Right.
What are your opinions on that in the modern era?
My students can train wherever they want. Although if we're busy acquiring a certain skill, I would let them know, like, hey, right now we're in this period trying to acquire this and this and this. Okay, so if you're gonna cross train, okay, no problem. Know your reason, but don't forget you have a certain set of skills that you need to acquire and to be able to perform. You know, if your goal is to perform, okay, then I'll let them know what's the schedule, where are we going with this. So if you're gonna skip and or if you're gonna go to a different gym, no problem, go. But know that we're going in this direction. I always want them to know in what direction they're going. So for me, it's always okay, like, I have some students that are super beginners and they just have a desk job and they just want to train sometimes there at Gracie Baja and come back. And I'm like, I don't see something wrong with that. You know, I actually heard, I don't want to stir anything up, but I heard them complain about, like, man, I went to this gym and I had to have like their uniform and what's that about? I'm like, well, I said, that's their policy. So we should always respect the other the other places, their policies, you know. I have no opinion against the uniforms, just so you know. You know, but I'm not particularly against it. What about
I cross train myself, right? So for me personally, I'm still on my jiu-jitsu journey, still trying to suck up info.
You can't tell no, you can't say I'm against it.
Yeah, so obviously I go to BST with Ray and Danny to try and learn from them. I think it's a good thing. I think if your goal's just to learn and improve yourself, get as much training as possible. I mean, we all go to seminars and stuff as well.
Yeah.
Does that count as cross training?
Exactly. Where's the line?
For me, the line's the kind of political line. I don't like politics and stuff like that. But like, if I know BST have had a case of this lately, if you've got a gym that's popped up as like a rival gym and there's issues with like stealing students or trying to steal students and stuff like that, and say they're like 100 yards down the road, hypothetically, then I can see a bit of a problem. And really, you should let your coaching speak for itself. And I'd like to think that as long as you put all your energy into your coaching and how you run your gym and stuff like that, you will be okay. But I've learned this the hard way, really. I guess newer guys, white belts and stuff, might not understand it as much, and they may tend to follow friendships rather than abilities and stuff sometimes.
The vibe of the gym.
Yeah, so that would be my only kind of exception. But other than that, I think cross training is awesome. You can learn from anyone, right?
100%. I think it's a balancing act, because obviously you get the benefits of the training of everything else and the different looks on things and different perspectives, different training methods. But in the same vein, there is politics still. As much as people say there's no politics, but at the end of the day, it boils down to rival gyms. A is going to fight against B, a fighter from A or B, or maybe C's gym, and you train there on a Saturday, you go there on a Tuesday, or whatever else goes on.
Yeah.
What happens when both of those guys are fighting each other? Who are you cheering for?
This is it, isn't it?
And I've been in that issue so many times of training in different areas, because ultimately I found for myself the variety is a huge benefit to be able to see these different things, spar with different people. And you guys see it as well, like at the open mats, sparring with someone completely brand new to you. It's basically a competition round, essentially, of you don't know what they're going to do. You've got no preconceptions of their techniques, their ability. It's like, okay, this is a fresh round, instead of, oh, this is Bill, we train together all the time, we do the same role every time. This is now Jack. Who's Jack? Okay, Jack does this now. Okay, what's Jack doing? And then there's so and so forth. Oh, here's Joe, here's Tom, Dick, Harry, and all the rest of it. It's like a real community you start to build, but also you get these fresh rounds, fresh looks on things. But I digress. Anyway, to wrap things up, last question I've got for you guys. What advice would you give to your white belt selves to make sure that where you got to today could have been that bit smoother or that bit more, I don't know.
That's a question there, isn't it?
It's not advice that I want to give myself, my white belt self. I would give myself class. I personally wanted to teach myself the foundations, because it would have helped me a lot to learn how to defend. That would have helped a lot. So I find that I didn't have that aspect. I don't know about you guys, but for me, back when I started, it was just wild, wild west. You get a position here, you get a position there, and you just make something out of it and just go. You know, the moment where I started to really learn defense through instructionals, it really helped. So I was like, oh man, I should have learned this way before. You know, yeah. I don't feel like it's an advice. It's more like if I had a structure, I'd be happier with that. As a white belt, advice for all the white belts. Train first, start with defense.
Yeah, I think that's good advice. For me, I think, well, white belt's a bit of a learning curve anyway, right? You're going to make mistakes and stuff like that. But for me, it's more look after your body. I think I'm pretty bad with that, whether it comes to recovery, sleep, training for injuries, not warming up. And if anything, I'm getting worse as I'm getting older, which is no good. So, yeah, I think my advice, even to my current self, would be look after your body more.
Yeah.
Do the right things off the mat, like the right warm-ups, like the sleep, the good diets and stuff like that.
Yeah.
Perfect. Where can people find you guys in your gyms?
Oh, you can find me at on Instagram, Jiu-Jitsu Cliff, and my gym, Jiu-Jitsu Labs. Follow me. drop a like, comment, save the videos. I'm in the Netherlands, so if anyone's ever in the Netherlands, hit me up.
For me, cracking MMA and fitness in Bedford. We're on Instagram, we're on Facebook. I'm not massive on social media, but yeah, if anyone's in the area, we've got an open mat policy. You're more than welcome to come.
Fantastic, guys. And also, everyone, we've got our open mats coming up. So if anyone wants to book a gym, any gym wants to book an open mat with us, fisticuffs.podcast@gmail.com, drop us an email. Say it's 12 till 4 on a Saturday. You choose the date. We choose the charity. It's all for whatever cause you choose it to be for. No politics, just training. And that's fisticuffs.podcast@gmail.com. Thank you, guys.
Oosh.
Oosh. Nice one, guys.
Oosh.